just move right to, I don't think there's any other business before we get started. Next up for JAC is Department of Environmental Quality. Director Parapet, the floor is yours. Welcome. And everybody else, please introduce everybody so I can keep getting the names straight.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so I'm Todd Parapet. I'm the Director of the Department of Environmental Quality. And with me here today, to my right, is Joe Franken. He's the Management Services Administrator. And also here today is Alan Edwards, who is the Deputy Director and also the Abandoned Mine Lands Administrator. We have Nancy Veer, who is the Air Quality Division Administrator, Kyle Wentland, the Land Quality Division Administrator, Luke Esch, who is the Solid and Hazardous Waste Division Administrator, Kevin Frederick, Water Quality Division Administrator, and Brian Lovett, the Industrial Siting Division Administrator. And then any questions that either Joe or I might stumble on, we'll turn to the administrators, and hopefully they'll be able to answer any questions that you have today. So, Mr. Chairman, what we have in our supplemental budget is two supplemental budget requests that I'll detail as we go through the budget, in addition to the governor's recommended 8% reductions. And just to point out, those 8% reductions are in addition to the penny plan and to the global cuts, as well as the governor's enterprise reductions. Now, if it's acceptable to the committee, what I'd like to do is just acknowledge that there are the governor's enterprise reductions, and not necessarily cover each time we go through the specific budgets for the divisions. The total reductions, when you look at everything out with the exception of the governor's enterprise reductions, so the penny plan, the global cuts from last year, and then the 8% reduction, we're looking at 10.2% reduction in our standard budget, 17-18 standard budget, and the elimination of 8 full-time employees. Now, we did go through a process, and I'm sure you've heard from others, the process that they undertook in determining where to make the 8% cuts. What I had done was ask each division administrator to look at where they could make 8% cuts within their division with the least amount of impact to the services that we provide. And some divisions were able to cut more than others. Some cuts were harder than others. But what we ended up with was 22 unique cuts that are prioritized, and that's prioritized throughout the budget book itself. The total reductions as a result of the 8% was $3,043,000. And as I mentioned, the which includes eight full-time employees. What I'd like to do is take you to start off with page 3 of the budget, which is
Representative Larson.
Parfit, would you just repeat that number? You said $3,043,000. We've got $3,211,000.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson. The 8% cuts represent $3,043,229.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
And Mr. Chairman, and the reason I bring that out is because when you look at page 3, you'll see that the total reductions in the general fund is $3,599,000. The difference is actually coming from the governor's enterprise reduction. So I wanted to give you the a true accounting of what the 8% reduction yields.
Well, and while we're on that number, the number that we came up with is your total reductions were 6% as opposed to 8%. So,
Mr. Chairman, and I think the difference is what we were asked to take the 8% reduction from was the 17-18 standard budget. And the 17-18 standard budget for DEQ was $38 million. The $42 million that you see on page 3 in column 2 is after the exception requests and after the penny plan and the global reductions. So it depends on where your starting point is. We were asked to do that from the starting point of the standard budget, 17-18 standard budget, which is $38
million. Yeah, just so we understand.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, what you'll see is then the general funds in sum are reduced by $3.6 million, and I'll talk in round terms. You'll also see a part of the supplemental request, and I'll get into the details of that in the appropriate section. We see a reduction of $78,000, and just a quick summary, and that's due to the reduction of an FTE or a repurposing of an FTE and having the services that the FTE was performing in one group replaced with contractual services. And I'll get into that when we talk about the administration budget itself. You'll also see that there's an increase in federal funds of $28.3 million. Largely that is due to the additional authorization that we need to spend AML grant funds for this year's grant. So, and then you'll see that the FTE headcount goes from 272 to 264 in the budget. So, now moving to the divisions themselves, on page 6 is a summary of the supplemental requests and the prioritization. They're both somewhat related to the Abandoned Mine Lands Program. One is for, as I mentioned, additional federal funds associated with the AML program and the request for authorization to utilize those funds. And then the other is associated with an IT position within the agency that we evaluated and determined it was most appropriate to not fill that position in that program with the use of general funds, but rather utilize contractual services. We can get the same services, and in talking with the ETS, they agreed with the approach, and then repurposing that position to AML, which is 100% federally funded, which will allow us to expend funds in the AML program more quickly.
Mr. Chair. So, Todd, and I know that we get back into AML monies at the end of this as well, but is this $28 million, is that any of the balance of funds that were owed to us, or is that new generated funds from coal production? And if I could add to that, how have we been diverting that somehow? Is this some that we've done some stuff for highway impact? Was that with these same funds last year? That
so Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, so in way of explanation of the AML funds, you're referring to, in the first part of the question, to what's called prior balance funds. And the state, with the 2006 reauthorization or 2006 amendments to SMACRA, there was a return of funds to states that were owed to the states that had been inappropriately withheld by the federal government. That amounted to seven equal payments of $82.7 million to the state of Wyoming. That's what's referred to as the prior balance.
Okay.
All of the prior balance funds at this time have been repaid to the state. And last year was the last installment. And there's a long way to getting there, but I'll save you that long explanation. But in short, the prior balance funds have been repaid to the state in full and have been authorized for projects by the legislature. So if we go to page 11, to pages 10 and 11, this is the administration or management services division. And you'll see that we have 13 FTE in this division. And the primary purposes of administration are fiscal, payroll, contracts, budget, human resources, and so forth. But keep in mind that administration also, it's broken up into two parts in the budget. There's administration, which is basically the accounting piece of it, and then there's the operation and maintenance for IT. And so you won't see any changes in the first part on pages 10 and 11, but on page 12, you'll see the first reduction, which is the 8% for administration. And that reduction is $342,607. This is a reduction in rental equipment such as servers, routers, and switches. And the reason we're able to do that is we had had a plan to have those services provided by ETS moving forward and paid out of the 400 series. And so moving forward, we're doing that sooner rather than later, and we will pay for those services out of 400 series funds to ETS to provide that, and then reverting the 252 series of roughly $342,000. And, again, this is something that we talked over and discussed with ETS, and they are
Representative Burkhardt.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, that $342,000 due to the IT equipment, do you know, will ETS show an increase of that amount?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burkhardt, no, they should not show an increase of that amount because that was part of the transition. It was or it should already be in there. But, well, it's actually in our budget because they're going to bill us and we'll pay it out of the 400 series. And so there is no additional expense. So moving, Mr. Chairman, moving to page 13, what you'll see is the first supplemental request of the two. And as I mentioned, we had an IT position that did the SharePoint management for the agency. And this was something that we had worked out in the past with ETS, that we would retain an IT position within the agency to assist with SharePoint. When that and that that individual left the agency, went elsewhere, and as we do with all of our positions, we evaluated what that position does. Is that service still necessary and appropriate, and is there a different or better way to provide that service? Working with ETS, we determined that a third-party vendor to provide that support would be less expensive than doing that internally with an FTE. So we have an estimate of contractual service. So you'll see an increase in the 901 professional services of $108,000 with a net difference of $78,351. Now, as part of this, the request is to repurpose that position to the AML program. And the AML program, over the last couple of years, we had reduced their headcount by two FTE, primarily because of some of the changes that had occurred to the AML in lieu funding. And instead of receiving the approximately $50 million grant on an annual basis, through changes in SMACRA, we were only receiving $15 million. And so we weren't doing the same number of projects. We didn't have the funding to do as many projects. Now we do, and by move or repurposing that position to AML, there's no additional cost to the state because that's funded through 100% federal funds. But it allows us to get projects out the door quicker. And one of the reasons, well, there's a couple of reasons why that's important. One is that we have people that are being employed, but also importantly is as we work through our priority one and priority two coal and non-coal sites, once we get through those sites, then those in lieu funds to Representative Larson's point, become available for potential public facility projects. And those would be recommended by the agency as communities might make application for some of those public facility funds. That would go through the DEQ. We would make a recommendation to the State Loan and Investment Board, and the State Loan and Investment Board would make the final decision on which projects would be funded by those in lieu funds. And that timing of that is somewhere around 2019, when those in lieu AML funds would be available potentially for public facility projects.
Mr. Chair. Representative Larson.
And Director Parford, are those, is there a fair amount of flexibility on those public projects, or is it still impacted by mining communities?
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, there are requirements as to, or sideboards as to how you can utilize those funds, and those are specified by rule. And one of those conditions is that it has to be impacted by mining-related or energy-related, I think it's mining-related activities.
As our good prior chairman used to say, everything's impacted in Wyoming by mining.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Well noted.
Okay. Mr. Chairman, I take you to page 15, and page 15 is just the summary for administration, and so just to kind of pull it all together, what you see is a reduction of $427,000 in the administration division and the reduction of one FTE. And so in the IT operations and support division, you'll see one FTE, and that is that FTE is our GIS support for the agency and also participates in the state GIS efforts.
Chairman Burkhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, I'm on page 15, 240, 704,000 plus for intangibles.
Oh, 15.
Page 15, it's code 0240.
Yeah.
I was just curious what intangibles are.
Mr. Chairman, my understanding is that the 240 would be for things like software licenses, software enterprise licenses for the agency.
Mr. Chairman, do you have many of those?
Mr. Chairman, we do have a fair number of enterprise licenses for the agency. I don't know how many licenses we have specifically, no.
Mr. Chairman, so these are unique to your needs. They do, the programs are unique programs that provide you with a very specific activity.
Mr. Chairman, I believe it might be both, but it is the standard enterprise licenses for things like Microsoft Word, the Excel and so forth, and others that I at this point in time I can't tell you what those are, but we can certainly provide those to you to answer that question.
Mr. Chairman, Director, if you would. I'm just curious. You don't make a big study out of it. I'm just curious. Thank you.
Mr. Chairman. Mr. Kocher.
If that's for licensing, how come it's not up in 207 with dues, licenses, and registration?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, I believe the dues, licenses, and registration is for professional organizations like the Association of Solid Waste Management Agencies, the National Association of Air Agencies, and things like that.
Well, you got me confused because that would explain dues, doesn't explain licenses.
Yeah, I Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure I have an answer for that, but we can certainly get back to you as to that.
Mr. Chairman, perhaps I could help.
Please.
Licensing, for example, would be a professional engineering license. Also on the 0240, intangibles. We'll change that for the future to say software and software licenses.
Please proceed.
All right. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Now, one thing that I do want to bring to your attention before we leave administration is that in the 2014 session laws, the agency was directed to evaluate and come up with a proposal on what it would take to become entirely paperless. And we prepared a report for the legislature along those lines, and as we were moving through the list of what it would take to become entirely paperless, the directive was changed slightly to say substantially paperless, which reduced the cost substantially. Each year we have come back and presented the next installment, if you will, of projects that we would need to undertake to fulfill that requirement. We had identified for this coming year $2.5 million worth of IT projects to move forward. We did not bring that forward because we didn't think that was appropriate at this point in time to move forward with those IT projects. We continue to make improvements to our IT services, either for electronic permitting and so forth, that we have within our existing budget. We'll continue to do that. We'll continue to make those upgrades and improvements to allow electronic permitting. For certain things, we allow electronic comments. So we have made a lot of progress, and we will continue to do that as funds allow.
So could you just clarify, it was $2.5 million that you did not bring forward. What would have that done, or what was the intended purpose of those dollars?
It would have been used for addressing ownership changes. We have, particularly within the oil and gas industry, permits change hands quite a bit, and so the development of software to be able to track that and manage that rather than doing that manually. For different types of electronic permits and air quality, groundwater permitting, permits to construct, and those types of things, and developing those systems. We do have separate pots of funding associated with things like the utilizing groundwater data more efficiently through a system that will allow each division to look at all the groundwater data. In fact, that will be available to other agencies and the public at some point, where all the groundwater data within the state that's been collected will be available. Right now, there are walls or silos on that data, and so you don't get as much utility out of that information as you would otherwise. And so we have been moving that project forward as part of, I believe that was part of the governor's energy strategy in 2013.
Thank you. Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So in this paperless project and those items you named, would that reduce time spent by industry trying to get permits, or is this mostly just how would that all shake out? And I guess maybe just a brief, very brief, because we got to go brief background on the paperless project and what its goals are, and if this is something that really would help industry get.
So, Mr. Chairman, in some instances, I would say yes. We've seen that with the entities that use the air quality electronic permitting tend to have a reduced processing timeline. And I would say that's also true in land quality. So there are instances where we do see improvements. A lot of the early improvements that we saw was in the actual hardware and infrastructure itself, where it used to take 4 minutes to download a document in our field office now takes 4 seconds. So we gain some efficiencies for sure. So, Mr. Chairman, then to take you to page 23, air quality. And what you'll see here are six separate reductions within the air quality division. We have two FTE that would be eliminated from the air quality division. The first is position 2035 for roughly $143,000 for the biennium savings. And now I have to speak to this one a bit because you'll note that this position has been vacant for 10 years. And so I think it warrants an explanation. And there is a reasonable explanation. This position originally started out as an IT position in 2007 when we started the an IT initiative within the agency, and we had added a number of FTE for that, and this is pre-ETS. So we had added some support services within the agency to improve our IT services. That position in 2008 was swept by the legislature there was impending budget concerns. And then it was repurposed by the legislature for carbon sequestration bonding. Now, we never filled that position because we didn't have primacy for the geologic carbon sequestration, which are the Class 6 UIC wells. Where we are today is we will be submitting we have everything finalized here on our end. We'll be submitting to EPA this year for primacy of the geologic carbon sequestration Class 6 UIC wells. And I don't know how long that will take for EPA to review and approve those. There hasn't been a state in the country that's had their rules approved yet. but we're going to be submitting those. Now, because we had some turnover within the agency because of retirements, we had to take a look at how we were providing different services. And one of those was bonding. And it was just the right time to do it from my perspective. And so we created an agency-wide bonding unit and housed it under the Industrial Siting Division because that's where our financial experts reside, without adding any FTE but utilizing the same positions that we're doing bonding within, say, land quality, for example, we'll work with the bonding group. And so we have a better tracking mechanism for all of the bonds that we hold. Right now, we hold as an agency over $3 billion in bonds, and so I think it's critical that we have a very robust system to track all of those bonds, and that's what we've done. This position is not necessary because of the restructuring that we've done within the agency, and so we're offering that back. Position 2047 is a position that we would be eliminating, and the end result would be that there would be a slight increase potentially in processing time for permits and also a reduction in some of the air quality monitoring and modeling activities. But with some of the other adjustments that we've made internally, we think we can absorb that.
Representative Sellers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Is this a person in a job or is this a vacant position as well? I don't see that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, all of the eight positions that are identified here are currently vacant. Uh, Moving on, we have training and conferences, the 207 that we talked about. And we have a $17,000 reduction there, in part it is due to we are no longer choosing to be members of the National Association of Clean Air Agencies. And the reason being is that there are two national organizations were created, one here just recently, which is the it's called APCA, the Association of Air Pollution Control Agencies. And we were members of both for a while as the new, I'll call it APCA, was being stood up. And then once they got their legs, and that took them a couple of years, then we contacted NACA and said we no longer want to participate in that organization because they were not necessarily focused on the issues or the way that we viewed the issues and less supportive of our interests, where APCA is more supportive of our interests, and that's why we chose to stick with APCA. Then we have a $100,000 reduction in emerging technical support. And a portion of this, or a large portion of this, comes from the fact that EPA, and it says proposed rules, but they have since finalized rules, rule revisions addressing what's called exceptional events. And that's like forest fires and naturally occurring events that might cause an air quality exceedance. Those are exceptional events, and the Air Quality Division is required to put together a report on each of those exceptional events to explain why it's either an exceptional event or not. This rule revision by EPA actually decreases the workload associated with those exceptional events. We usually see it go the other way, so this is a good thing that we see coming out of this EPA rule, and that has been finalized. So that $100,000 reduction seems to make sense. The next reduction in air quality was $58,000 for a Met Tower. This is in Farson and was associated with the Upper Green River Basin, where we had historically some ozone exceedances of the standard. We have not seen any exceedances, and I hope not to jinx this, but we haven't seen any ozone exceedances in the Upper Green River Basin for the last 5 years. And that's largely a result of the efforts of the citizen task group, the industry efforts to reduce emissions, and quite frankly, weather that was conducive to not creating higher ozone levels. So.
Representative Solomon.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So this will be your test this year because we're going to have lots of snow on the ground, and that's every time that's exceeded is when we've had a high snowpack and kind of in March when that occurs, and then you get that bounce back off the snow.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, that's exactly correct. And we had originally planned on starting the ozone monitoring or the ozone season, where we actually look for have the meteorological studies internally and issue ozone alerts if we think that the conditions are right for an exceedance. We've started that a few weeks earlier than planned because of the recent weather events. So, yeah.
Representative Schwartz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So when you say the monitor is no longer needed, is that $58,000 operating costs or the action? You get it.
I get it. So Mr. Chairman and Representative Schwartz, that's right. So the $58,000 is operating. So we have the hardware, but the operating expenses for that meteorological station, we've collected the data that we feel we need, and we don't see the scientific reason to continue that one.
Follow-up, Mr. Chairman? But so it's still in place, for instance, the situation as Representative Summers describes. If there's an exceedance, it's ready to go again?
So, Mr. Chairman, yeah, if we needed to reactivate that, we could, but we would have to draw funds from somewhere else, obviously. But keep in mind that this is not an ozone monitor. It's only a monitor for meteorological conditions. And then the last proposed reduction for air quality is 47,000 or roughly 48,000 with a funding shift. Now, one of the things that we did when we were looking at where we could take reductions, there are certain things that can be paid for out of the Title V fees, and these are fees on large emitters of constituents, and they pay a fee based on what they emit, and then that is used to run that program. And there are some contractual elements related to mercury deposition that we felt were appropriately applied to the Title V program that were currently being paid out of general funds, and that amounted to $47,000. So that's how we came up with the 8% reduction in air quality. Now, there is one note here that I do want to draw your attention to, and this goes back to the prior balance discussion with AML funds. Since 2009, AML funds have been utilized to fund some of the base program funding for air quality. And the amount for the biennium is $1.3 million, is currently being, for the base of the AML or air quality program, is being paid with AML funds. And those funds will end at the end of the biennium. And so we will be coming here next year to have the discussion about how we replace that $1.3 million, which historically would have been paid for out of general funds. But we haven't paid out of general funds. It's been a subsidy, if you will, for the last 8 years using the AML prior balance funds, and now it's we'll have to go back to the general fund or some other source of funding. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. And so with that, I would take you to page 25. And, again, this is the summary for air quality. So what you'll see is a reduction of 583,000 or roughly 584,000 in general funds, and an increase in the operating funds for the Title V air quality emission fees of $48,000, and then a reduction of two FTE from 76 to 74. And then moving to water quality on page 30.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Before we jump ship on air quality, Director Parfit, going back to your on page 20 where it talks about the division's compliance workload continues to increase because of air quality testing around the state. And so my question is, does the department or the agency, they're not actually doing the testing? A third party is doing the testing, and you guys are witnessing testing. And if that is indeed the case, could we not – how necessary is that if you've got a qualified third-party tester that could validate that? And maybe you do that. I don't know.
So, Mr. Chairman, if I understand the question correctly, we have a number of, monitors, air quality monitors, throughout the state. Some of which are managed by the agency and are under contract, or maybe I didn't hear you correctly. And some are managed by the industry itself, and some are managed by other federal agencies. So we do hire qualified contractors to do a lot of the operation and maintenance on these monitors that we own and are responsible for, if that answers your question.
Mr. Chair, well, and I just look at, I look, Director Parfit, I looked at that statement. It says we've got, that we conduct more than 1,000 physical inspections of air pollution sources each year. And so I was taking that not so much as being the monitors themselves, but actually doing source emission tests. Am I just confused on that?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask where you are?
Page 20, on the fourth paragraph starts out the division's compliance workload, where it talks about monitoring 26,000 air pollution sources in the state.
Oh, yeah. So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Larson, this is our compliance staff. These are the permitted, these are the permits that we've issued, and our compliance staff will go out and do inspections to ensure that they are in compliance with their permits.
And so let me kind of come back then originally and say, how necessary are they actually monitoring, taking monitors, or is it just a visual inspection? And if they're doing monitoring like a NOx, I don't know if it's an emissions test, or I'm just trying to see if how necessary it is to have your people on site each time.
Mr. Chairman, the inspections are to ensure that they do have the handheld of the flare cameras to determine whether or not there are any or excessive leaks and so forth, and they also do evaluations of the equipment, making sure that it's operating properly. Are they taking samples to the lab? No, we don't take samples and have them analyzed. The companies do that. They hire contractors to do that. So if that answers your question. But the staff that we have doing the inspections that we have are agreements that we establish and work out with EPA for the primacy, that we do so many inspections, and what we accomplish within those inspections is worked out in our agreements for the grant monies that we receive from EPA. And those are pretty much the minimum that you'll see that states have to achieve in order to maintain their primacy and their funding level. Okay. So on page 25, no, we did 25, so I'm sorry, if you go to page 30 is the beginning of water quality. And you'll see this is the area where we had the largest amount of cuts because we have the greatest amount of general funds associated with the Water Quality Division as opposed to others. And so, again, we had two positions, reduced two positions, position 3074. And this position was eliminated, and it's associated with bonding related to coal bed methane activities. And these were the on-channel reservoirs that during the coal bed methane heyday, if you will, there were a lot of reservoirs, water management reservoirs installed on-channel were the ones that we were responsible for. And we have roughly somewhere in the neighborhood of 800 of these reservoirs that will have to be reclaimed. And and they all have a bond associated with them. We, again, with the reorganization of the bonding and putting it all under one umbrella within the agency, feel that we don't need no longer need this position and can manage the bonding efforts the way we've reorganized under the Industrial Siting Division. And then the next position is 9509. This is an at-will position. And reducing this position will result in a reduction of our involvement. Mr. Chairman, if I can.
Please.
I'm having a bit of a issue here. If I can take a five-minute break.
Sure, absolutely.
Thank you. Or 2 minutes. That's okay.
Please do. Okay. We'll take a quick break.
These positions.
Yeah, Yeah, there would be because. I don't think so. I mean, when the producer's gone.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I apologize for that. That dry weather, I got a bloody nose, and so when I walked out, everybody thought it was a pretty rough meeting in here. So,
wait till we get the other side, too.
What's that?
Till we get the other nostril.
Yeah, right. Right. We don't do indoor air.
Good thing you've got good quarterback,
Mr. Chairman. Okay. So thank you, Mr. Chairman. And so we were on position 9509. And at the end, you'll see it states that the DEQ is also asking to unfreeze position 3025. We had a number of positions that had been frozen. And as we talked with the governor, we asked, and this was frozen by the executive branch, not by the legislature. And so we had asked to unfreeze that position and then offer up the 9509. And so that position went through the exception request with the governor. It was approved and has since been filled and is working on the ambient water quality assessment team. The next guy, and there are several small ones in here, but also notable, but we had MVMS, which is a vehicle associated with water quality, $14,000, and that vehicle was reassigned to the NRC program, and the $14,000 is associated with the operation and maintenance cost through MVMS. And so you might want to ask, well, why is that a savings if you just move the vehicle over to another division within the agency? And the reason being is, that will be a 100% fee program once that program is stood up, and so there won't be any general fund associated with that. We'll talk about that some more when we get to the NRC because that's also associated with some of their cuts. Then there's a $5,000 reduction for carbon sequestration consultant. As I mentioned, we have completed the geologic carbon sequestration application to EPA. The rules have been finalized through EQC, the Environmental Quality Council. And so there's no need for this this contract moving forward. The next is a $100,000 reduction in emergency response actions, and this is to respond to things like the Clark Well blowout, if you remember that, up in Clark, Wyoming, and other emergency situations that might arise. So this would reduce that those funds by $100,000.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. So if you're reducing those by 100,000, I could go back and look, but just what do you roughly have to cover events like that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, so the amount that we had prior to this cut was 500,000, so that would reduce it to 400,000. The next item is a $400,000 reduction in the produced water pit reclamation. This is, again, associated with the coal bed methane bonded reservoirs. The reason this had been in the budget previously was that we had several companies in bankruptcy, and rather than wait for the delays associated with those facilities that might be in bankruptcy, which represented about a third of the reservoirs, we had planned on doing some of the work ourselves and then doing cost recovery. What we're saying here is that we won't be doing that. We've actually been working with those companies and have a plan moving forward. So by revoking their bond, going through the Environmental Quality Council to get those funds so that we can actually use those funds to do the reservoir reclamation. The next item is $158,000 associated with total maximum daily loads, which are basically addressing any impaired water bodies that have been identified. The consequence of that reduction is delays in getting to some of these impaired streams and developing the solutions to removing those impairments. And then the last item is $28,000 for the nutrient group technical assistance, and that's one where it'll just basically the end result will be it'll delay the work of the nutrient management group. That's a nutrient management strategy is required by EPA. We might get a little pushback from EPA, but I think we can manage through that. And it, like I said, it'll just delay that by a little bit, but we're going to move forward with the nutrient management planning.
Steve.
Todd, just explain to me what that nutrient management means. Do I take that literally, or is that just a name? Or
Mr. Chairman, what that's all about is we're required to develop the standards for nutrient management, so phosphorus nitrogen loading. And so this is a work group on how to actually go about developing the appropriate standards.
Thank you. Senator Atlanta.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director, just a quick question with regard to this total maximum daily load and your interaction with local conservation districts. My interest in that, it, of course, is up in my neck of the woods. The work we've done on that Platte River and the how important that is to our ability to get that selenium out of there, so that I mean it affects so many things. What's that relationship with the conservation district that your folks have had, and what will this change on that front?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Landon, I don't think it'll change anything in terms of the relationship with the conservation districts, the reduction. If anything, it'll require additional or more robust discussions with the conservation districts. You know, we We view the conservation districts as a partner in the work that we do associated with impaired waters, and a valuable partner. And you know, that's a relationship that we need to continue to nurture as we move forward.
Quick follow-up, Mr. Chairman. That water treatment plant issue up there is a big one. Are there deadlines associated with some of that content that we've got in that Platte River up there? There are unique geological characteristics, I think, that are contributing up there, but I know you're aware of how urgent that is for that big community up there in terms of not really wanting to expend the kind of money it's going to take to put a water treatment plant in if we don't get that under control. My concern about reductions is related to that. If it's going to push it back, can you speak a little bit about that? What?
Mr. Chairman and Senator Landon, I don't think the $28,000 reduction is going to have a significant impact on how we're addressing issues in front of us right now to that degree. I think it would be fair to say that we will work with the communities on the point source issues, understanding that there are potential financial burden, and if those are if there's an opportunity for, in some instances, allowing for variances, that's one of the things that we're exploring, if it's related to, say, ammonia. But looking at what's right for the circumstance in that particular water body. But as far as the pace of the work associated with that, I don't see that changing as a result of that $28,000 reduction on the work group.
Okay.
Representative Summers.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Just not now, but in maybe a future one page or something, give me some information. I think, is it the yellowtail? What's the dam up in the northwest that caused all the problems? And I've had representatives ask me to quiz you out more thoroughly, so perhaps later you could provide me some information on that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, I believe if you're talking about the Willwood Dam, just the short answer is yes, I can provide you that, and we are working very closely with not only the irrigation district but also with the our sister agencies, the Game and Fish and Water Development State Engineer's Office, to develop a path forward, a solution moving forward, because we're going to run into the same issue down the road if we don't tackle it looking at the long-term for a long-term solution. Mr. Chairman, then page 33 for water quality. This is the summary, and again, as I mentioned, this is the where the largest portion of the general fund reductions occurs, because it's the division that has the largest proportion of general funds. So you see a reduction of $1.2 million in general funds. And then you'll see a reduction of 2 FTE from 72 to 70. And then moving to land quality on page 37.
Excuse me, Mr. Chair. Mr. Kocher.
What on 0901, what are those professional fees that you're dropping? Just shy of $700,000.
I'm sorry. Oh, so that's the sum. Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Burns, if you look to page 30, you will see, starting with the carbon sequestration consultant at $5,000, and then work everything from that point.
Oh, that's
on
just
down.
That. Oh, okay. That's it's just the sum. Realization of this. I'm sorry.
Yep. Okay, so then, Mr. Chairman, if we go to page 39, or no, I'm sorry, 37. Page 37 is the Land Quality Division. This was a situation where we didn't have a lot of options in terms of where we could make take reductions. And what the Land Quality Division the cuts that resulted there were the reduction of three positions, position 4016, 4037, and 4052. It's important to note that the impacts from these reductions don't really affect the coal mining industry or the uranium mining industry, where the impacts would probably would mostly be with Trona bentonite and sand and gravel. Because the others aren't impacted by the positions that are funded with the general funds. But through some management process changes and reassignments of workload, we think we can manage this and still provide the same level of service that is expected from the regulated community. In one of those changes is an ID development process, which is what we call MIDAS, which actually helps the management of our data and information within that division, so we're more efficient. I wouldn't say we're more efficient that we can cut three FTE, but we had to look somewhere to make those reductions, and that's where we landed.
Sir Larson.
Were these field positions or vacant positions?
Mr. Chairman, as I say before, these are all vacant positions, all eight of them.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Driscoll.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. Ms. Parafit, can you break down the number between the coal and non-coal employees? I see there's 45. What do we have in each half of that?
Mr. Chairman, I don't know if I can do that at the, at this moment. It's not a. Let me put it this way: we can get back to you on that in terms of the relative FTE that are associated with coal versus non-coal. However, there aren't individuals that are assigned to just coal, so they do coal, they do uranium, they do a variety of things as the projects come up. So we would have to break out how much time they allocate towards coal based on position. And I think we have that available.
And then, Mr. Chairman, follow up. With that being said, with the change in the coal industry and the bonding requirements, some of them are now going away from self-bonding and back. Is that going to increase or decrease workload on you, and does it take some off? I see you got 26 active or 26 mines, it shows, and yeah. I was just curious.
So, Mr. Chairman, Senator Driscoll, right now the workload is increased because we're dealing with some bankruptcies. We're dealing with companies coming out of bankruptcy and the time that we have to spend with them as they come out of bankruptcy to ensure that we have the appropriate bonding in place as we move forward. And so that necessarily takes more time than if we weren't dealing with those bankruptcies. Certainly, the other thing that we're looking at is how we move forward and evaluating self-bonding. And through the Interstate Mining Compact Commission, which we are a member of, and actually Mr. Wendland is chairing the effort through the Interstate Mining Compact Commission to identify what role self-bonds will have moving forward and what those self-bonding requirements and policies should be versus what they are today.
Okay, thank you.
Please proceed.
All right, thank you, Mr. Chairman. So going to page 39, what you'll see is a general fund reduction of $626,000 in land quality and a reduction from 45 FTE to 42 FTE. And I also note that this does not affect the NRC program simply because they have their own They have their own budget item in the book, which we'll talk about. The next division is on page 42 of the budget book, and this is industrial siding. And there are three reductions there. The budget's relatively small for industrial siding. There are two FTE in the budget. So the reductions are coming from communications, in-state travel, primarily associated with the Industrial Siting Council. There's a seven-member council. When we do have meetings that aren't otherwise covered by a permit fee, then we have to incur that cost. So we are utilizing teleconferencing to hold those meetings to reduce the costs associated with travel. And then the last piece is on professional fees, and that would be, as we do rules, a contractual needs associated with technical information for rulemaking, reduction of $10,000 there. So on the next page, you'll see the total reduction is $61,000. In industrial siding, the FTE count is still two. I do want to mention that one of the things with industrial siding is that when there is a permit, all the activity with the division and with the council is paid for by the applicant, and then that reduces the amount of the 100 series that would be used as we have those projects. So if we're, depending on how many projects we have in a year, we'll have a larger or smaller reversion of general funds. So, and that takes us to page 48, which is the Solid and Hazardous Waste Division. And we have two specific reductions in Solid and Hazardous Waste Division. A reduction of one FTE, position number 6030. And this position is associated with the solid waste programs, whether it be permitting the cease and transfer or landfill remediation. And like we did in water quality, with the elimination of this position, we had requested, and we had two frozen positions through the governor, through the executive branch, and we had requested that that position, 6046, be unfrozen. Now, that also, like the position, the IT bonding position that we relinquished, probably bears some or needs some explanation. That position, and I'm sure you have that on your breakout sheet, that position was vacant, the 6046, for 42 months, so for 3.5 years. And that's because that was frozen administrative or through the executive branch for that long. So we were unable to fill that position. So rather than relinquish that position, and have to do a reclassification, we chose to unfreeze that and then relinquish position 6030. It was for expediency between the two positions, and that's why we did it that way.
Mr. Kocher.
Just for the committee's edification, we're going to continue on until we finish DEQ before we go back. Both houses are only going to be doing committee of the wholes, and leadership has let us know that we're excused for whatever hearings we need for as far as committee of the whole goes.
I'm waiting to get another bloody nose.
Yeah. All right. Appreciate that.
Do not consider having a license to slow down.
Point well taken. So, Mr. Chairman, just one other point on this position that was unfrozen. That will be 100% funded out of the corrective action account, so that will not be funded by general funds, whereas the position 6030 was out of general funds. this position that we unfroze, 6046, because it will be working on landfill remediation projects. And the landfill remediation, if you recall, is going to be funded out of the corrective action account moving forward.
So, yeah, because on the spreadsheet we have, it was looks like it was 30, 30, 30 roughly. And so, Don, we just make a note of that so we don't so we know. Make sure we don't cut that position.
Thank you.
Okay.
So, Mr. Chairman, in the second part of the reductions for the Solid and Hazardous Waste Division comes from swapping out federal funds for general funds. And this is related to the state response program, which was really associated with the voluntary remediation program in Brownsfields. We received additional funding from EPA to the tune of $340,000, and we have no reason to expect that that'll go away in the future. So we've swapped that out with federal funds and eliminate the general funds associated with that program.
Great. Representative Schwartz.
Senator, thank you. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. In relationship to the cease and transfer program, I know this won't happen immediately, but am I correct in assuming that over time the requirements to monitor this should be diminishing as these projects are completed?
Ms. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, the short answer is yes. However, it's a scale issue. The cease and transfer program will remain as long as there is funding for that. And that is funded separately through separate appropriations. Right now, I believe there's somewhere in the neighborhood of $12 million remaining. We believe, based on what we've received from the communities, is that the grant and loans that will be issued under the cease and transfer program, the amount that we have in there is sufficient to take us to July 1 of 2018. The landfill remediation is funded out of a different account, which is called the landfill remediation account, and the way that would or the corrective action account, and the way that will work is that there's a pace of funding, roughly $8 to $10 million annually, moving forward, that will be, well, it actually starts out smaller than that, but eventually gets to a point where it's $8 to $10 million. So at the pace of funding and what we can manage project-wise within the agency will dictate the timing of when we get to the end of the road, which should be somewhere in 2030-ish time frame.
Thank you. Something to look forward to.
So, Mr. Chairman, then that takes us to page 51. That's, the summary, and what you'll see is a reduction of general funds of $570,000, an increase of state response program funds from EPA of $340,000, and then a reduction of one FTE from 44 to 43. Mr. Chairman, our folks were busy behind us addressing a question by Senator Driscoll. So if I may, I'll just provide that answer. The time split between and what amount of time we're spending on coal versus non-coal is 54 non-coal, so that's trona, uranium, bentonite, and sand and gravel, and 46% of their time is spent on coal. So if you just take all the FTEs, and that would be the way to look at it. So then, Mr. Chairman, we're getting close to the end here. On page 54, this is the nuclear regulatory program, uranium agreement state program, and we have one item to cut there. It's $120,000 for transportation equipment, and part of that is by reassigning vehicles. We talked about that in water quality. We took one vehicle and assigned it over to the NRC program, and so we had a $14,000 savings there. This program right now is currently being funded by general funds, But we will be submitting our final application to the Nuclear Regulatory Commission in the third quarter of 2017. It will take, the NRC estimates it will take them a year to approve or not our application, but we believe it will be approved within a year. So that means third quarter of 2018, the program will go from general funds to 100% fee. And so, and that's something that's not reflected in here, but just so that it's clear with everybody, so that's $1.7 million or $1.8 million roughly for the biennium, that is general funds, that will be taken over by a fee program in the third quarter of 2018. That's about 6 months sooner than what we had, well, 6 months to a year and a half sooner than what we had projected. So we're on a pretty good pace for that. The well, anyway, so that's the $1.7 million to kind of keep in mind that will be available and not utilized by the program moving forward. The other point is the money that was spent will be somewhere to stand up the program will be somewhere around $4.2 million over the 3.5 years. The payback, because we have, if you recall, we have three FTE that are currently generally funded. Once we stand up the program, they will be fee funded. And so the payback on that $4.2 million, if you recall in the discussion, is about 10 years. And so we'll recoup that $4.2 million that was spent. So then, Mr. Chairman, I take you to page 59. And this gets to the second supplemental request that I had mentioned at the outset. And first off, we talked about the repurposing of position 1012, and that would be, again, to manage new projects with the funding that we have moving forward so that we can get to public facilities sooner. I do want to point out on page 60 there is a typographical error. Where it says various object codes, it says $21,255,000. It should be $28,255,761. It's just, I think, a typographical error. So that is our second supplemental request, is to have the authorization to spend the $28 million. We didn't have enough authorization after the budget session last year to cover the new funds that we'll be receiving in this year's grant. We had assumed $50 million. We think it's going to come in closer to $40 million, but we will only spend what they give us. So that's the second request there.
Representative Larson.
Director Parfit, is there a time frame on that? Do we have to have that spend or committed before we can apply for or get them? Or, and once we do get them, is there a time limit if not?
So, Mr. Chairman, there's a couple parts to that question. The first is the funds that we receive are based on a 28 cent per ton tax that's applied to the coal industry. We receive back from the federal government 50% of that, and that makes up the in-lieu funds for AML reclamation. So that determines how much we receive on an annual basis. So production's down, so the amount that we receive back is going to be down from what it's been historically. The other part of the question is we had made a commitment at one point that we would do, because we're a certified state, we would do $30 million worth of reclamation in coal until we had worked our way through that inventory. Right now it's anticipated that somewhere around 2018-ish, that we anticipate that we will have worked through the priority one and priority two coal and non-coal, and that's when the public facilities projects would be eligible for funding.
So last year when we got the, and I forget the term you used, the backlog, the money, the
prior balance.
Prior balance stuff. I thought I had it in my head that those funds, we had to show expenditures in order to apply to get those funds reimbursed to us, and so we was trying to get that money spent through YDOT to release those funds. Can you, is that making sense how that all goes, or am I just, have I been smoking something weird again?
I don't know about the second part, but Mr. Chairman.
Yeah.
Mr. Chairman, the funds related to the Department of Transportation were prior balance funds, and that was determined by the legislature that that would be the appropriate way to utilize those funds. And then general funds that might have otherwise been used for the Department of Transportation could be used for other priorities of the legislature. So that, if that gets to the question. Okay. So, Mr. Chairman, that takes us to the end of the budget book and our reductions, and stand for any questions.
Representative Berker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Director Parfit, I noticed in your 900 series for last year quite a large amount of money for storage tank remediation. Is that project about done, or where do we stand with that?
Mr. Chairman, when we started the storage tank program, we had about 1,600 sites that needed to be remediated. We're down to, I think, somewhere around 140. We've worked our way through that pretty much, and we're on this decline in the amount of sites that will have to be remediated. Now, keep in mind the source of funding for the remediation of the storage tank program is not general funds. It's the corrective action account, and that's where legislation was passed to start to take some of the corrective action funds and use that for landfill remediation, but maintain a baseline because there's a financial insurance requirement for tank operators, and that is achieved through maintaining a certain level of funding in the corrective action account. And so if that answers your question.
Thank you.
Any further questions?
Mr. Chairman, can I ask one with more just curiosity?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Going back to page 22 in air quality, there's a reference to fees on per ton emissions. And I first noticed it just because we're lower than the standard, but it was – later on, it says that one of the reasons to keep that price low is because it could potentially create volatility in the per-ton fee. And I just didn't understand that.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Schwartz, what you're talking about are the Title V fees. And so these are our major sources of emissions, okay? And so there is a fee assessed based on what they emit up to a cap. So they only have to pay up to, I think it's 4,000 tons per pollutant. Anything above that, they're not paying, right? So there is, and that's how the fees are based. So the more Title V facilities you add, the more the fund grows, or vice versa if you remove them. But as these facilities become more efficient and emit less and they drop below that threshold, that also reduces the amount that we collect. And then we have to evaluate on an annual basis, based on where those emissions are, do we need to either raise or lower the fee? Now, we've kept it steady at the 34.5 cents or $34.5, I think it is, per ton. One, for certainty with the industry, and then you start playing this game of, well, we raised it too high or too low. We are the lowest in the country. I think the presumptive fee based on EPA is around $48, a little over $48 per ton, and we're at 34 right now. So we're comfortable where we're at, that we have enough to fund the activities that we need to out of the Title V or major source program.
Thank you.
Okay.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Co-Chair.
If I could be parochial, at the your narrative at the bottom of 59, you said you've discovered new hazards in Kemmerer, Glen Rock, Sheridan, and Reliance. What's the hazard in Sheridan? What's the newly discovered hazard in Sheridan?
So, Mr. Chairman, could I get that page reference again?
I'm sorry?
What page are you on?
59.
Oh, it's AML?
Nothing clears the air like a good fireworks show.
Oh, okay. Mr. Chairman, this may be one that, if okay with you, if I defer to Mr. Edwards.
Absolutely.
Maybe. Oh.
Takes two buttons.
That's all right. Mr. Chairman, the newly found hazards were as a result of the heavy, wet spring that we had last year statewide. A lot of the old underground mines started to basically erode and were expressing themselves at the surface. So we went out and conducted some further exploration to try to define if those were a hazard or not and if we needed to do something. In those particular areas, we found that the mines were collapsing at a rate a little faster than we thought, and they did pose a potential hazard. In our field investigations, we also found some areas where underground mining had occurred for which there was no record of it, which was a real surprise to us. So we've added those to our inventory as well. So all of those are related to underground mines that were abandoned.
So you're talking about those century-old mines?
That is correct, Mr.
Okay,
Chairman.
Thank you. No, it's not fireworks.
Any other questions? All right. I think we're wrapped it up for DEQ. Thanks a lot,
right,
Director.
Thank you.
We'll... One more question.
Mr. Chairman, thank you. I was just looking at the vacant... At the vacant position list, and you had three positions besides, or four besides the 42 one that you mentioned. So you had a 7006 at 21 months, and you had a 4010 at 10 months. Of course, that's a combination of funding, and a 406. Those are kind of the long-term vacancies. So. Just curious about those positions.
We're just reading them all in.
So, Mr. Chairman, Representative Summers, let me start with the first one that's 21 months vacancy. This is the Nuclear Regulatory Commission program, and we have intentionally not filled that until we are ready to bring somebody on board and have them go through the training. Basically, because we don't feel the need to bring somebody on and just have them waiting for the program to be stood up. As far as the 4,006 position, we are in the process, and this is part of the reorganization as we looked at the cuts that we were making in the land quality. This is land quality division position. And I mentioned that we were looking at how we were actually delivering the services. We are in the process of reclassifying that position, and so that's part of why we have the 10-month delay there. So there are a number of things that have to – the reclassification usually takes a couple of months to get through the process.
Mr. Chairman, then the other one was a 17-month position, like it was 30, 45, a natural resource analyst, and then there was a 12-month position that was a 40-10. A 12-month position that was a 40-10.
Before you there's an updated list.
Okay.
That has the ones that have been filled, and we'll get that to you soon. And there are a few positions in there that I can suggest that there's a good likelihood they're going to go away. If there is any particular one that you think is important, I think you told us one. But, for example, I'm looking at 7006. It's been open for 22 months, and it's 100% generally funded. Those type of positions we're likely to cut. And so if you can find other positions that you think you can swap out, or you can fat federal funds for comparable positions, please let us know, because there's a high likelihood that may occur. Okay.
Mr. Chairman, if I may, if there is, when would that come about? And if there is,
it'll come up in markup next week.
Next week, okay. Because there are certainly positions that would be, for example, the 7006 is problematic, because that, if we lose that position, we basically lose the agreement state program.
And when we do those strike positions, we'll leave it open for you to find another position to fill it with and go through a B-11 or whatever you have to do in order to fill that particular position. But it's the dollars we're interested in.
Okay.
Okay.
Thank you.